Welcome to the Payments Podcast, where we talk to innovators about how they're reinventing, reimagining, and recreating the payments ecosystem.
Hi, it's Karen Webster for Payments.com, and I'm here today with Mark Masser, Senior VP Product for Chase Payment Tech, and Russ Mahey, who is Executive Director of Technology for Chase. Hey, Mark and Russ, thanks for making the time to speak with me today.
Thank you, Karen. Thanks, Karen.
So we all saw Apple Pay now. We've seen what Apple's plans are for mobile payments, but obviously the two of you and your teams have been living with this for a little while. I'd love to get your perspective before we dive into specifics. What is the overall most significant thing that you think Apple Pay delivers to the payments ecosystem?
Well, this is Russ. I think just in general, the most significant thing that Apple did, of course, was enter their announcement into the payments business. That in and of itself is the most significant thing. And the devices themselves are obviously significant as well. The watch got a lot of play. But the secure element and the idea of being able to authenticate the consumer reliably at the consumer's device and also have the merchant application be authenticatable and do all that in a transaction that has just a wonderful customer experience wrapped around it is a pretty significant thing, we think, and really kind of a turning point in where the wallets have been going over the years.
And this is Mark. The the introduction of these methods of payment, obviously, as Russ said, just Apple entering into this industry as a payments technology provider is pretty significant. And, I think that across the industry, this is, a lot of effort, a lot of work from a lot of the players, both traditional and not traditional, I suppose, that, brought this together and ultimately to the market. This is, more significant than any of the other wallet plays that we've seen in the past. This is, as Russ said, a change in the user experience, and, sort of tactically the introduction of the whole in-app payment experience is a real game changer and likely to change the way consumers pay for things online in the very near future.
I would agree with you on that point. I want to come back to the in-app experience in just a minute, but I want to come back, Russ, to something you said with respect to a better consumer experience. So when I was watching yesterday and I saw the interaction with the new phone, which are lovely, at the point of sale, it was obvious to me that Apple Pay at the moment is really exclusively about paying for something. And my question for you is, we've been living in a world where NFC has been around for a long time, 8-10 years, depending upon when you start counting. And that's never really been enough to get a groundswell of interest on either the merchant or consumer part to get it off the ground. Why do you think it's enough this time?
Well, I mean, in the past, NFC has been used for contactless cards primarily, which I guess one way to say it is that's not that compelling a case. Whether you swipe my card or I tap my card, that's six of one, half the other. The ability for me, though, to store my cards digitally in a secure wallet and carry them with me is pretty significant, I think. I mean, you know the statistics really well, Karen. If a person loses their wallet, sometimes they don't know it for quite a while, but if they lose their phone, they know it very fast. So, carrying those very important payment credentials with me in a secure way and having them available to me at my fingertips, and obviously setting a foundation here for expanding into things potentially down the road beyond payments. Famous is obviously the opening play here, but we'll all see where this goes.
I would agree with you that I think there's more to the NFC story than just payment. But, there have been a couple of other attempts with digital wallets and NFC that really haven't ignited. And, maybe it's too early, maybe those were too early, and maybe it's they weren't Apple. I think it's just interesting that if you kind of look at the experience, by and large, it's very similar to what has been introduced in the past by others. So I was curious to get your take on why this time it's different. Mark, do you have any perspective on that?
Yeah, I think that, seeing the demonstration yesterday, there are subtle differences between this and some of the other NFC wallet endeavors in the past, both in the experience side as well as the sort of addressable market. The experience, is a little bit cleaner, a little bit faster, a little bit smoother. You know, we don't know what the future holds as far as, the engagement between the consumer and the merchant, and how those things are going to shift. NFC as a technology, as a way to bind consumers with other, players, whether that's merchants or service providers or whatever, it's still pretty open field here. Everybody's kind of pigeonholed NFC into payments, but I think it's more than that. It's using that technology to put the stickiness together to enhance the relationship between the consumer and the merchant or, some other, interaction point. You think about it, the reason that I believe that ultimately phones or devices or smart devices of some sort or another will ultimately take over is just the capability of the platform. A piece of plastic, whether it has a chip or not, is ultimately not nearly as capable as a smart device. So an iPhone is an infinitely more capable platform, an engagement platform, than a piece of plastic. And I think that while we're still a little bit away from sort of advanced engagement use cases, I think that they'll ultimately win out over plastic.
I totally agree. And I think merchants want that. They want a different way to communicate with their customer. And I think there are just some phenomenal opportunities that no doubt you are pursuing as part of your roadmap as well. But let me ask you another question about the consumer experience at the merchant. Are there things that you've had to perhaps adjust from a process perspective to enable consumers, for example, to use NFC at the point of sale without having to sign or enter a PIN? I mean, that would, kind of mess up the whole clean experience. And that is obviously something that with a card, given the initial application at some of the low value merchants where transaction values were less, didn't really come into play. How are you thinking about that?
This is Mark. Sort of tactically speaking, the brand have a little bit more than a year, basically made some adjustments to the rules around tap and limits and things like that. Sort of tactically, some of the barriers were dropped, and we're seeing some of those rules being implemented in the market already. So, I think the old, kind of the old method of thinking, which was if I tap, there was a floor limit essentially, and I would be prompted to swipe or dip or whatever, or sign or pin above a certain dollar amount. Those rules are by and large gone at this point. From a merchant perspective, like an implementation kind of perspective, merchants that are in the game today with contactless, or about to enter the game with contactless readers, obviously the timing is really good here because of EMV. A lot of merchants are going through re-terminalization, and so all of the devices that are EMV capable, not all, but a significant portion of them are also contactless or NFC capable. So really, from a merchant perspective, this is kind of part of the normal upgrade path. And if they follow the implementation steps that most merchants that have, gone before or in the process right now, they're going to look at, what changes do I need at the point of sale right now in order to enable things like chip, tap, end-to-end encryption, tokenization. All these things are starting to kind of meld together. And, merchants are going to be able to take advantage of that. So, I think that a lot of those folks are, on the merchant side, they're looking at, what do they have to do now? But frankly, the barrier here to entry and use of NFC is relatively low at this point. You know, a lot of merchants have readers, even if they don't use them very often, right? They're you know, kind of sitting out at the edge there. And, you know, for the most part, those implementations will work with an NFC tap, you know, whether that's Apple Pay or some other solution.
Gotcha. What are you hearing from merchants? And I know, obviously, this is early days, and probably a lot of them were hearing the announcement for the first time yesterday, too. But is the population of iPhone 6 users sufficient for merchants to be convinced that they should turn on NFC? I mean, if you do the math, it's 25 million in the U.S. Of course, that number could get larger if people decide to ditch their contract provisions and just buy the new phone. And the question is whether being able to pay is going to be with their phone is enough to get them to do that. But is it enough for merchants to take the action now? What are you hearing?
Well, this is Russ. I mean, honestly, Karen, it's a little early to know. Our bet is yes. This is, we think of it almost like a trigger point. Merchants have been debating the introduction of the newer terminals. In our case, we have a Chase Blue terminal that a lot of our merchants have gone to, which enables EMV and you kind of get contactless for free. So this is the type of thing that would be a triggering event, in my opinion, to say, well, I obviously want to have the ability to, I have a customer walking in my store and they want to buy something and they choose to use their phone. Am I going to turn them away? Most of our merchants would say that sounds like a bad idea. So.
Yep. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, merchants will adopt what they see a lot of consumers interested in using to pay, and there hasn't been enough interest around NFC until potentially now for them to change their minds. And I agree. I think it certainly is a triggering event for that technology at the point of sale. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about tokenization, which is the other aspect of what Apple really emphasized yesterday. Questions in terms of the approach that is being taken. What do you do, and what does Visa or the network do? Where are the lines of demarcation, if you will, to help us understand how this new tokenization solution works?
Karen, this is Russ. From a Chase perspective, of course, there's two sides to our business, the issuing side and the acquiring side. On the issuing side, Chase being one of the larger Chase Visa issuers, pretty significant involvement in the whole process of provisioning and letting which cards they're going to choose to participate in the tokenization aspects with each of the brands. The brands have each individually stood up their own tokenization vaults and tokenization services and have built out entire ecosystems here for managing the interaction of provisioning cards between the major and minor issuers and Apple. So we almost think of the brands as the current operators of the token vaults, but also the middleman, if you will, between the issuers and Apple in terms of getting cards into the consumer's wallet. Mm-hmm. So brands have done a pretty remarkable job, frankly, in a short amount of time in coming together to build a standard around the EMVCo standard, which is, Karen, you know this very well, for the three major brands to get together and agree on something this quickly takes quite the triggering event.
And obviously,
Apple. Yeah, we think so too. So, and we've been working with them for quite a long time on this, and so that is their primary roles. On the acquiring side, obviously, we acquire for many of the large e-commerce environments out there, and are very attuned to what's been going on with the wallet players, and we support most of the major wallet players. So we were early enthusiasts of this, and our role here is to do our traditional role, make sure that our merchants have the technical capability and the operational capability to accept these new form of payments at either NFC point of sale or in-app
via some of the services we've built for. One thing to kind of add on to what Russ was saying, specifically from the standards perspective, the EMVCO standard, obviously a really significant development, but the constructions that the standard have put out there in the market, this kind of concept of a token service provider, which today the brands are acting on in that kind of role, but also the token requester, which is sort of like saying wallet, you know, wallet provider, which in this case Apple's playing in that role. And if you think about it, these two players in the market, token service providers, token requesters, this is like, you know, throwing a bunch of tools and wood out in the middle of the room and saying to somebody, build something. And, you know, we don't know what the outcome of this is going to be. I think that we're going to see lots of different use cases and new models and, you know, a lot of exciting development where, you know, people that may not have traditionally played in the payment space will start to think, well, you know, we can enable, you know, new methods of payment, new ways to interact, new ways to provision credentials. So I think that this is a very exciting thing, and the standard enables that.
Let's talk a little bit about, this is a good segue to the in-app solution that we saw, because I think that provides some really interesting opportunities, and you alluded to this at the start of our conversation. What do you think is the game changer with respect to Apple Pay in-app?
Well, Karen, we really are excited about the in-app piece. We think that's quite a significant piece of everything that Apple's offered here. I mean, you know, it's well known the size of the iTunes base and how much of the digital e-commerce that Apple has today through their iTunes interactions. And when you put all the pieces together of what they provided here, now giving more retail-oriented merchants the ability to have their own custom apps out there that allow them to sell traditional retail products, you know, in their app and get more traditional card-present rates or card-not-present rates in this case, is a pretty significant thing with the combination of the user experience. We think Apple's done a tremendous job here in defining a very elegant way, frankly, for people to build into this app a consistent method of consumer experience payments that's going to work very, very well. And so, you know, we have been all over that and are very happy to be supporting that.
This is a huge opportunity. This is one of those game changers that you know, we're extremely excited about. As I said, I don't think we can underestimate the value of this new experience. It's, you know, depending on, you know, how you look at it, you know, a significant portion of e-commerce shopping happened on tablets last year. You know, think about how this changes that experience if, you know, all of a sudden I can pay with my thumbprint, essentially, right, on, you know, the latest and greatest app from my favorite merchants.
Certainly from a consumer perspective, it's an amazing development, and I agree with you that from an ecosystem and developer's perspective, I can just imagine, you know, the mashup of developer beacon, you know, you know that's coming, and payments with, you know, through the SDK that they're making available. Some very powerful things can certainly happen. How has that changed your thinking about your own plans for, you know, the quote unquote digital wallet? I mean, obviously, you want to create robustness around your portfolio of product offers, but does it change your thinking about wallets within wallets? Because they're kind of that's really what this creates then, is an acceptance mark that then front ends other things.
Yeah, sure, Karen. I think wallets over the last 3 or 4 years at least has been, you know, a fairly bandied about term, and, you know, things that have been called successful wallets in the past, you know, some of them weren't that great an experience, frankly. We've gone down the tack of building what we call the Chase SDK that allows any of our merchants or any of our merchant developers to bind in our SDK very quickly and be able to support this whole new Apple Pay concept without having to know a heck of a lot about payments or get involved in all the intricacies of the brand differences and so on. So we think a payments platform SDK in combination with the Apple SDK that merchants code to gain access to the secure element, you put those things, two things together, and a merchant can now do what they do well. They know how to build good apps, and they don't want to spend a lot of time learning new methods of payment. There are other SDK-based payment methods out there that one can bind into your app, but it's not the world's most elegant experience from a development standpoint, and then it's also not the world's most elegant experience from a consumer standpoint. And we think the combination of those few elements here put together well gives you both things. Gives you a great developer experience, gives you a great customer experience, and you know that's why we think it's going to be adopted pretty quickly and pretty well. And so we've invested a lot of our development and operational side in making sure that that's as smooth an experience for the developer community coming into us and the merchants coming in where they can quickly pick up SDKs and go through automated certification and testing and all those things. Because the goal was to get them up and running quickly, get them certified, and get them able to accept Apple Pay without having to, they don't even need to understand some of the underlying cryptography and everything. We take care of all of that for them. So we think that's a pretty powerful combination.
It really is interesting when you think about it, because one of the things that I think it forces everyone to think differently about is, you know, everyone thinks about containers. So I want to create a container depending upon who you are, whether you're an issuer or a retailer. People want to build their own containers through which they have the loyalty information, offers, coupons in their own little container. What we saw yesterday was there's Passbook, that's the Uber container, and then there are opportunities for players like Chase to be easily accessible within those containers and to then figure out how to attach all of those customer acquisition and loyalty tools and techniques to that in that environment. It may challenge your thinking a little bit, maybe cause you to think a little bit differently about how you're going to do that, but certainly easier for the consumer and clearly the merchant.
Yeah, we would agree with all that. And you know, definitely, our Chase perspective is a little different than maybe some of the other acquirers out there because of our ownership relationship here, frankly, with the largest issuer, in that when we talk about Chase customers here, on the acquiring side, we mainly think about merchants, and when we get transactions in, they come from merchant-centric devices, and Chase generally thinks about consumers. This is a nice marriage of the two, and this is why we think it's so powerful for our brand. We now have consumers walking around with consumer devices sending us authenticatable merchant transactions. It's a pretty profound thing that's going on here subtly. And we think we have particularly unique assets we can bring to that that are going to be very strong.
Mark, do you have a point of view on any of this?
Yeah, you know, you mentioned wallets and containers and sort of rethinking strategies and things like that. And you know, from a Chase issuing perspective, we want to be top of wallet, right? We're clearly the premier Visa issuer. You know, that's my 2 cents. And we want consumers to be able to use their Chase instrument to do that. Now, when we start to think about how do we make the experience better? How do we enhance the experience? Because of the benefit that we have as being the largest, Visa issuer around, and also being, one of the top tier acquirers, how do we enhance the experience for the consumer? And perhaps that's a wallet within a wallet thing, or that's a binding in things like the SDK as Russ mentioned, and enabling things that are above and beyond just payments, bringing to bear our full, you know, commerce services that are available to merchants inside of an application that's, you know, very tight and focused on the consumer. So, you know, there's really just a huge, you know, advantage that, we have over so many other players in the marketplace. And, you know, we're going to leverage that advantage, but we also want to be sure that we take advantage of the opportunities that are out there, whether that's, you know, an Apple Pay or, you know, the next thing that comes along. We want to be where our consumers want us to be, right? And we want to be where our merchants want us to be. We're, you know, very progressive on both sides. So this is a huge opportunity for us.
It is interesting. As I was reflecting on this, their choice of naming convention, I mentioned this in the piece that I wrote, that I thought Apple Pay was kind of a very deliberate naming strategy that suggested that they really did want the consumer to associate this experience with Apple. And, you know, one of the things that I think everyone has always worried about with any of the, you know, quote-unquote wallet schemes is sort of being subordinate to someone else's brand. Are you worried about that at all? Has that thought crossed your mind? I don't know when you knew what the name of the product really was going to be, but have you thought about that at all?
This is Mark. We didn't know about the name, you know, or we can't really tell you, you know, any of that, the sort of the details around that. But you know, look, Chase is a brand, as a consumer brand, as an acquiring brand, we're clearly one of the best brands, you know, in the world. And partnering with Apple, which is, you know, the most valuable company in the world and obviously, you know, one of the strongest consumer brands around in the history of consumer brands. I don't see that it's, you know, subordinate or, you know, one dominating another. You know, you can look at all of the pictures and you know, press material and, you know, see what happened on stage. And, you know, it's pretty clear that the Chase brand is pretty dominant prominent inside of that entire experience.
Karen, and just to highlight that point, there are a lot of great brands out there. And from a acquiring standpoint, you know, we're in the payments acceptance business. And we have always traditionally accepted any form of payment that gets to scale and that our merchants want to use. We are absolutely convinced our merchants are going to want to use this new method of payment. And we're delighted to partner anytime we can with, you know, a company like Apple. You know, we've done it before, and we will continue to do it with them and the rest of the great brands that we service.
I would agree with both of your points. I think that Chase has done an extraordinary job over the years in positioning your brand as a very valuable consumer brand in the payment space, and I think that sticks. And I also think that the merchants will want this. And, you know, we've written a lot about Apple consumers being bigger spenders, driving more spend, certainly at merchants, and I think merchants will be excited about this. Last question. You know, we've been playing around with mobile payments for a really long time, and everything in payments always takes longer than we all think just because it's so hard. But it sounds like there are a lot of things that you're doing and certainly Apple Pay is doing to facilitate a faster path to mobile payments. Do you really think that this development will make our path to mobile quicker?
This is Mark. You know, one of the things that we discussed a lot with Apple and the other partners was the burden of legacy. And I come from a, you know, retail background. I've been, you know, in that space a long time. And that's always the big barrier, right, is this sort of the albatross of legacy. And when we started working on this and thinking about it and implementation and, you know, how is it supposed to work, you know, we wanted to try to leverage existing rails as much as possible. And so, you know, I think that from an adoption perspective, we've tried to pull all the barriers down for this. You know, the data itself follows and is formatted to, you know, fit into existing, you know, systems and messages and languages. So, you know, I think that we've done is just about everything possible to try to remove all of the barriers for merchants. That being said, you know, the reality is that retail, merchants, payments, it all moves relatively slowly. But, you know, you can just look at the trajectory of how and what has changed in checkout and retail and shopping over the last several years. You know, the first iPad didn't hit the market until 2010, right? And here it is 2014. It's only 4 years later. And iPads themselves are, you know, hugely popular and, you know, broadly used in retail, right? I don't see them at Kroger or Albertsons or, you know, any other pick your favorite shopping, you know, grocery store. But, you know, gosh, you know, you go to so many other specialty retail, other verticals, and it's all over the place. So I think the trajectory has changed on using consumer electronics, both as acceptance and presentment. And couple that with all the barriers that we've tried to bring down for adoption. And I think that, you know, we're going to see pretty broad scale use and adoption in the next, you know, couple of years here.
Russ, you have the last word.
Well, I would agree with everything Mark just said. And, you know, again, going back to our kind of our opening line, we think the big news of yesterday was Apple's in the payment business. And Apple doesn't enter into a business and drift out of it. They're here, and you know, we think they've done quite a remarkable good job, and we think the other the brands have done a very phenomenally good job, and the large issuers have really moved a lot to get to where we are today. So there will be a ramp-up period. There's no question about it. You know, merchants who want to do the in-app experience have things to do. Merchants who want to accept this at point of sale with NFC that are not NFC capable today have to deal with the issues of swapping out gear and so on. But we believe, again, this is kind of a triggering event, and we think the trajectory is going to change a little here, and mobile payments and wallets are going to accelerate.
Well, Mark and Russ, thanks for taking time out of what I know is a very busy time for you to spend the time to give us your insights. It's been a really fascinating conversation, and congratulations. I know that there's been a lot of hard work that's gone into this, but at least you can talk a little bit about it now. You must have felt like you were part of the CIA, because I'm sure you were under strict gag orders not to speak at all. So at least
we had code words. We had code names and code words and everything, you know, so.
It's been a real delight today to be able to use the word Apple. Like,
yeah,
it's almost hard for us to say, but it's gotten pretty easy all of a sudden.
Well, again, congratulations. We look forward to speaking again as the Apple Pay product gets into the market.